You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 350 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. When I realized we were heading to a landmark episode like this one, I thought long and hard about who I would really like to talk with. And there was really only one answer, and that's Robert Venditti, who is working on Hawkman these days. I love the book with a passion, and I wanted to talk with him about some of the things that are going on in the series, as well as other things that he's writing. We talk about Carter Hall, his alter ego, and the various incarnations of Hawkman that now span the galaxy, which was a fascinating twist that he added to the character. We also talk about the future and what we can expect from the book in the months ahead, including some friends returning to help the Winged Wonder. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get through in this landmark episode, so let's get on with the show. It's always great to talk with Robert Venditti, one of my very favorite writers in comics today. And he's doing one of my very favorite characters of all time, too, Hawkman. How are you doing today, Rob?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
I got a chance to bump into you, I think it was at San Diego, I think, or somewhere, and I didn't get a chance to talk with you then. But I mentioned there were so many wonderful things about this book that I really wanted to talk with you about. But before we dive into that, I wanted to say how much I really enjoyed your Green Lantern series and how I thought how well it wrapped up in issue number 50. I enjoyed that book so much. I have so many people I know who that book was in their top 2 or 3 comics, and so you did a wonderful job with Green Lantern. It's hard to follow up Geoff Johns, but I think you did a wonderful job of it.
I appreciate that. It was an extremely fun book to work on, being able to have all 4 of the characters, you know, sort of those traditional, classic, if you want to call it, Green Lanterns, you know, Hal, John, Guy, and Kyle, to have them all in one book for such an extended period of time hadn't really happened before. So it was great to be able to do a whole 51-issue run with them and really let them play off each other and you know, show them work together and show what makes them separate. And I'll miss writing those characters. It was a lot of fun working on that book, but you know, onto new projects and new things like Hawkman.
Yeah, which is great. Now, I, of course, got to ask, how did Hawkman happen? I mean, did they approach you? Did you make a proposal? How did you get to do Hawkman?
They asked me if I would be interested in pitching on Hawkman, and similar with a lot of comic book characters, because I didn't grow up reading comics. I didn't really start reading them until I was in my mid-20s. I don't have a real deep familiarity with a lot of characters from a continuity perspective. I sort of know, you know, I know who Superman is, I know who Batman is, I know who Wonder Woman is, those kinds of things. And beyond that, I sort of just know about characters from general pop culture knowledge. And Hawkman was a character that I knew the visual of from cartoons when I was younger. But beyond that, I didn't really know a lot, except the sort of reputation the character had for having a very confusing and impenetrable continuity, you know. And so for me, that was actually a big appeal, because I felt like he was a character that hadn't been on the stands in a while, and he did have that reputation. And as far as my skill set, every writer's going to have holes in their game, but I think one thing I do well is find a way to make the puzzle pieces fit together. Mm-hmm. And the reputation he had sort of made him sound like the ultimate puzzle. So wow. It was a very appealing thing to me to be able to pitch for that and try to throw my hat into the ring and you know, see if I could do something with a character that was new and different and respected the history of it, but also, you know, pushed it forward into new directions. And it was pretty early on in my research for the character. You know, I don't know, the first couple hours of me reading just the basics on Wikipedia or something like that, that I started to ask myself why somebody didn't approach it, or whether somebody had approached it the way that I was thinking of it, which it was reincarnating, you know, and taking that to another sort of next step beyond normal earthbound reincarnation. Mm-hmm. And then I just started reading issues and issues and issues, read the whole Silver Age run. Mm-hmm. You know, read everything that's modern pretty much. And, you know, some of the history is tough to find. You know, there's that era, you know, sort of in the Tony Isabella stuff that hasn't really been collected and, isn't necessarily in everybody's long box either. So some of those kind of things were hard to find, but I ended up cobbling together a lot of it and being able to read it in Hawk World and things like that. And the more I read and the more I was sort of waiting for somebody to make that same connection that I had made, you know, it just never really happened. And it seemed like that would be a great sort of way to try to, as I said, respect the character's history, but also push the character forward into a new direction as well.
Well, thankfully they accepted your proposal, because, you know, Hawkman is, in my opinions, if it's not the best book when it comes out in a week, it's next to it.
I appreciate that.
I put the best books on the bottom of my stack because I want to end on a really good note when I read my comics. And Hawkman is always, it's funny to say, is on the bottom of my stack because I want to read something really good when I get there. When I get through other comics, I'll kind of read the mediocre ones, and then I'll get to Hawkman, and I'll be like, oh boy. And I end with a big yes. What a great book.
I appreciate that. It's a lot of fun to work on. And of course, having Brian Hitch on the book is such a huge asset. And my earliest conversations with him, when I sort of gave him the basic premise, if you want to call it that, that, you know, we're going to take the history of Hawkman and instead of just reincarnating across time, we're going to reincarnate across time and space. He really liked that idea and thought it had merit in the same way that I did, which was great to hear, because, you know, he's a legend in this industry and he's done far more with comics than I have. So to sort of get his stamp of approval on it made me feel even more so that we were kind of going in the right direction. And he's brought so much of his own creativity and input to the stories as we're working together. It's really a collaboration in the best sense of the word. And as much as it's the writing, it's also the art that makes it that book that's at the bottom of your stack.
Well, I have to say, you've brought up a subject that made smoke pour out of my ears when I read the first book. When I discovered there was a Hawkman on Krypton, mm-hmm. My head spun around, and I was like, what? Wait a minute. A Kryptonian Hawkman? How can that be? And then, of course, you know, I was already, you know, bought into the book. When I read that, I said, oh my gosh, I've got to see you throw these wonderful curveballs at us, like his mace. I don't understand what's going on with the mace, and I'm sure we'll figure that out, because it comes back to him sometimes. And I'm like, you know, Shades of Thor, you know, kind of stuff. And I love that stuff. And I just sat there and I said, man, you've taken Hawkman and moved him from what I thought was like a third or fourth tier character onto a top tier character. He's got all these wonderful things that are going on, and I'm so fascinated. And you're right. You're in the latest issue. We see the Hawkworld Hawkman involved, and right away I'm going like, how are you going to make this work? And so I can't wait for the next issue. It hasn't come out as we're recording this, but I can't wait to do it. It's so great that you like to untangle these kinds of things, because man, Hawkman sure needs you.
Well, a lot of it really, I don't know if it would necessarily be possible without Metal. You know, when Scott wrote Metal and what he did with the Hawkman mythology, and, you know, instead of him just going back to ancient Egypt and Prince Khufu, he went all the way back 10,000 years or more to the dawn of man. And that's just such a long span of time. And there's so much ground there that, one of the immediate questions I had was, what's he been doing all this time? Mm-hmm. You know, and it just seemed like it would be very boring for him to have been reincarnated on Earth all the time. When you have something as wide and scale as the DCU, and you have a character like Hawkman, whose history has had him be, an intergalactic alien police officer, but also an Earthbound archaeologist. And so, you know, to has to say that he had a past life on Thanagar, or one on Ran, or one on Krypton, and there's lots of other places too that we're going to get to, just seemed like, again, it was respecting the history of the character, but also opening it up to new things and new ways, and hopefully doing exactly as you said, which is to make him a foundational character of the DCU. A lot of what Brian and I want to do is not just tell fun adventure stories, but also establish Carter Hall as sort of the living historical document of the DCU. You know, he whether he remembers it or not at this point, he's been there for it all. He's seen it all. And that in and of itself makes him incredibly formidable, but also is tragic in a lot of ways. There's cultures like Krypton that don't even exist anymore that he was once a part of. And we'll learn more about that as we go through this first year. But, you know, he feels that loss because that culture is gone. And so, again, it just felt like a way to really make Hawkman a central character in the DCU and have this giant web that he's connected to, you know, everything, which we'd already seen some in some ways with things like what Geoff Johns did with him being Silent Night and things like that. So this is by no means new, but what we're doing is we're taking it away from just purely on Earth and the Earthbound events and making it something that's far more cosmic in scope.
See, as a Hawkman fan for a long time, I've just got to say thank you, because I've always felt that Hawkman has been underused. He's always been he's been like a Batman with wings. He's been all different kinds of other stuff, but he's never been a great character in his own right. And yet I think that you guys are making him just shine. And I like to say he's soaring as a wing character. He's doing so. It's just, this book is just fantastic. I mean, the first four issues, I think, you know, the group Hawkworld that's on Facebook.
Sure.
And yeah, sure. Everybody on there is just like the guy that's the head of it. Every couple of days before the Hawkman comics come out, he puts out a graphic. 5 days until Hawkman. 4 days until Hawkman. And everybody's going, yes, yes, yes. Oh, we know.
Yeah.
We're getting it. So, you know, you've got the fan base all excited, which is really great. And, you know, it's just a wonderful storytelling. One of the things I did want to mention, you talked a little bit about Carter Hall, and I wanted to bring it up, is that the group has kind of said that you've made Carter Hall an interesting character in his own right. You know, he's not just a mask that Hawkman wears on occasion, but he is his own person in that way. And I thought that was quite an accomplishment. I mean, you know, as an archaeologist, he can be dull as dishwater, but being Carter Hall the way that he is, the way that you're doing him, I think that he's really a fascinating character, and I think that he's making Hawkman, he's adding to Hawkman instead of being like an escape from Hawkman.
Well, first I'll say, you know, as far as the Facebook group, keep doing all that, you know, because this is a character that does have a reputation that's alienated a lot of fans and readers over the decades, and it's a hard-fought battle. This is a character who goes all the way back to the 1940s and has never had a number 50. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's a hard-fought battle with a book like this, hanging on to readers or making readers who feel like they've been burned by the character in the past that, no, really, this is a good Hawkman series and you should read it, because it's not even just a good Hawkman series. It's a good comic book series, or it's a good adventure series, or any of those kinds of things, you know. Mm-hmm. So the more you all can spread that word and sort of proselytize for the series and for the character, is the better the chance that this new this sort of new lease on life that he has is going to stick. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, I see Carter Hall and his archaeological background is enormously fascinating. I understand how it could be sort of viewed as dry in certain ways, or if it was done in certain ways. But, you know, one of the things that Brian and I talked about in the beginning is, you know, what would be the point of having a character like Carter Hall, but have him only do things archaeologically that any other character could do in any other book? You know, like, let's really make this guy the archaeologist of the DCU. Where can he go and what can he do here that he couldn't do at Marvel or in an Indiana Jones movie or in any of these other things? You know, like, there is no Gorilla City in those places. There is no Thanagar, you know, there is no Microverse where we're getting ready to go. So all these things that we can do, I think make him fascinating. It's not the archaeology in itself that's boring. I think that's a really interesting profession. It's how he goes about doing it and where he goes and the discoveries that he makes and really this entire mystery that we've made for him in this first year of the series where, you know, he's searching for his own past, trying to uncover his own history and, you know, finding clues that have been left by himself throughout time. You know, so it's a bit Indiana Jones, it's a bit National Treasure, and the twist is that the clues and the trails that he's following has been left by himself because he knew he was starting to forget. And presenting it in that way, it's very compelling for somebody who's as powerful as he is, and in a sense is immortal because he reincarnates over and over and over, but to not have that most basic understanding of self that everybody else takes for granted is a huge weakness for him and a huge source of conflict. That I think you understand that desperation, that drive that he has to discover and to explore that he's always had. And he's realizing now it's been as much about filling the gaps in his own past, whether he realized it or not, as it was about, you know, making just general archaeological discoveries. And as he says in issue 3, this is the mystery of his lifetimes. And I don't know, it's just, I find it a very compelling predicament for a character to be in.
It's just the best. I mean, you know, I am just, I'm gripped every issue. I'm just, you know, I get that situation when I get to the last panel. I go, oh, it's not done, is it? Oh, no. I've got to wait another month for that. It's too bad they didn't do this biweekly. I would be happier. But, you know, it's probably easier for me.
I'm very happy to do this monthly. I did the biweekly train for a while. I want to say that I'm the only bi-monthly, I guess. I'm the only it's semi-monthly. You're right, biweekly. I'm the only writer, I think. I don't know if this is for sure, but I'm trying to think in my head. I think I might be the only writer that did 51 issues in a row of a biweekly book with Rebirth that I didn't take a single issue off. Like nobody came in and helped me for an issue or wrote instead of me for an issue or any of those kinds of things. I hit those 51 deadlines in a row. The art team obviously was a huge part of that, but it is a very grueling sort of relentless content generation game when you're doing a biweekly book. So I'm very happy to have it monthly and hats off to Brian. You know, the pace he's been able to keep on 22-page stories that are not the simplest stories in the world. I mean, you know, when he draws the ruins of Gorilla City and the way he renders them, or, you know, his rendering of ancient Egypt and all the hieroglyphics, or his rendering of Thanagar and the Blade Runner vibe that had, you know, all these things that he draws. And every issue, we're in a different place. He makes a new discovery and moves on to a new location. And for Brian to be able to keep that pace and bring that level of craft to not just the rendering, but also the storytelling that he does, you know, it amazes me. He started issue 5 went to the printer last week, and Brian started on issue 6 on Thursday. And he doesn't work weekends because he, you know, doesn't like to. Not that he doesn't like to, but, you know, that's family time. You know, I envy that of him. I wish I couldn't work weekends. But so he had Thursday, Friday, Monday, and today, and he turned in 10 pages of issue 6 already.
Wow.
That's staggering. When you look at the quality of the art that he turns in and you think that he can do that kind of pace, it's unbelievable. And so I'm very happy to have it be a monthly book and to have him be able to do this story with me issue by issue. And honestly, I wouldn't change anything.
Okay, now I have to talk briefly about it. I just want to touch on his drawing of Hawkman's costume, including the helmet.
Yeah,
the helmet's a big deal. For Hawkman fans. And so this is another case. I mean, you're writing stories that grip us, and then he's drawing in such a way that makes Hawkman stand out in a way. I mean, so many people talk about how well he does the helmet, and, you know, how it just sparkles in that way. You know, it just makes us want to see. And there are some people who are actually trying to make real helmets that look like what he's done, you know, with it. And I think that's a huge compliment, because you know, when you've got a writer that can write this wonderful stories, and you've got an artist that makes everything, like you talked about, all the various situations just work for it, and his costume even work. You know, it's a time for Hawkman fans to really enjoy, and I'm just, you know, like I said, the helmet to me is just, I always look at that, and it's always a big deal to me. So to me, to see that and to see all these cylinders firing at the same time, I'm just, you know, I'm so happy for that, and I thank you guys and DC and everybody to give this character that opportunity that I really felt that he deserved. So
yeah, that's Brian. You know, I mean, the design that he did for the character, I think he carried forward elements of it from the Hawkman Found one shot that he did with Jeff Lemire as part of the metal tie-ins. Mm-hmm. The wings retracting into the harness and sort of everything coming out of the medallion. Those are all, you know, his ideas as he was sort of thinking, you know, logically, how is this going to operate with this character going from, you know, wide open skies to tight tunnels and ancient ruins. And, you know, a lot of those things, you know, a lot of people, I don't know if they know necessarily Brian's background. You know, he did a lot of conceptual design work for the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek film, the Josh Trank Fantastic Four film, Doctor Who. You know, he's just a great conceptual artist as well as all of the other, you know, tools that he has in his toolbox. And so seeing how he puzzles those things out and makes them work visually, because Hawkman is not the easiest visual to hit on the page. Mm-mm. And, you know, those wings are gigantic, and where do they go when he's got to walk in a door and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff, you know? So, you know, Brian is really a tremendous asset in that regard.
Because wings are a big challenge. And whenever I see, like, cosplayers, they'll often just have, like, cloth wings. But to me, they have to have the feathers and stuff in it. And when I kind of look at it when I see the cloth wings, I go, eh.
Yeah, and Brian renders all that stuff. The way he draws flight and the positions of the body and the way Carter leverages his body. Mm-hmm. And these are all things that he and I talked about very early on. I'm a huge bird nut just as a hobbyist. You know, I have bird houses and, mm-hmm. you know, bird feeders in the yard. And I'm always, ever since I was a kid, I've always been fascinated by birds and, you know, how birds of prey hunt and how they leverage their body and their speed in order to make a crushing blow and all these kinds of things. You know, these were all aspects that we talked about in the beginning, and how could Hawkman be drawn visually in battle to convey those things. And, you know, he's able to do it all so expertly, and it's really amazing.
Because one of the things that used to drive me crazy about, like, Hawkgirl on, for example, Justice League Unlimited, she glided everywhere. Her wings never flapped. And I would always so mad about that. I'd sit there and go, why can't her wings flap? The only way she can fly is if she does that. So I,
and the very first issue, Hawkman number one, he drew this page and he turned it in. And I was like, look at the downstroke on those wings. You know, like, I don't know that I've ever seen Hawkman's wings in a downstroke position before, you know. And he just pays attention to all that stuff.
Yeah, it's just so wonderful. I mean, you guys just are a terrific team on this. It's really great. Now, you said a couple things I want to follow up on. You talked about the Microverse. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard of the Microverse since, like, Justice League of America way back when. And, you know, are we actually going to that same Microverse?
We are going to the Microverse, I guess, I don't know, the one you're talking about that was in the – the Microverse we're going to is the one that was established in the Steve Orlando run of JLA.
Oh, gotcha.
It was from Rebirth, yeah. That's okay. Where we're headed. As it was established in that storyline, that's where Ray Palmer is. He's in the Microverse, watching over things, exploring the Microverse. And so that's where we'll be for issues 5 and 6 of our story. And, you know, having read all the back issues of Hawkman that I have, I really wanted to do something with the Atom for a lot of reasons. First of all, he's a great character. Mm-hmm. Second of all, I love the team up of the two and how they work together, the camaraderie that's there. And thirdly, it just struck me that if you have a character like Hawkman who is learning that he's been reincarnated across time and space, who better help him to understand that phenomenon than his, you know, a genius physicist that also happens to be his best friend, you know? Mm-hmm. So story-wise, it just made a lot of sense that he and Ray Palmer would get together, and what Carter's going to learn from Ray and what he's also going to discover for himself inside the Microverse. Mm-hmm. is a huge thing that will propel him into the latter half of this first year of the series. And some of it will be very immediately apparent, what we're setting up, because you'll see it in the next issue when we do issue 7, which will be sort of an origin story issue for Carter Hall. But it'll there will be other threads that we're also going to return to and pull on that might not be as apparent. So we've really thought through this first year on the book and how all the pieces are going to fit together and what threads we're going to pull on when. And there's already a lot of stuff that we've laid down that I don't think people know we're going to come back to. And when we do, hopefully it'll surprise them.
See, this book yells adventure to me, and I miss that.
Which is the point. Yeah. And I don't know that there's a ton of comic books out there that do that right now.
No, that's one thing I love about it.
Yeah.
It's just amazing to me. I mean, we get to see the microverse. He goes to Thanagar. He's got all other things going on. And I don't know where you're going to go with it next. Now, you've set it up such that he could go to Krypton. I mean, if he goes back in the past and goes to Krypton, that would be a wild adventure.
Maybe that's going to happen. Okay, we'll just have to see.
I'd love that if that's the case. Now, you said something else that I wanted to follow up on. You said that Hawkman had never had a 50-issue run. Now,
I don't believe he's ever had a number 50.
Yeah. Now I have to ask you, you did 50 issues with Green Lantern. I mean, if sales continue, might you consider doing that, breaking that record and making a Hawkman 50-issue run?
Oh, sure. I would definitely do it. But, you know, there's so many factors that come into play there. And, you know, Green Lantern is obviously a household name and is a much bigger profile of character than Hawkman. And so getting to a 50 with, you know, Hal Jordan and John Stewart and Guy Gardner and Kyle Rayner is an easier thing. But that doesn't mean it's impossible, but a lot of it, again, is going to depend on how much we can not just keep the readers we have, those, you know, the hardcore Hawkman fans, but go in and bring in other readers as well and say, you know, this really is a character and this really is a comic that I don't care what you think about Hawkman or if you've never heard of Hawkman or if you hate his guts or whatever, this is a take on it that we feel you should check out because it is different than everything else that's on the stands and it has, you know, Brian drawn it. If for nothing else, even if you hate the character and you hate my writing, just go look at the art. You know, he's one of the modern geniuses of our medium, and that's not hyperbole. So, you know, that ultimately will tell the tale. But for me, I approach it in the way I approach every series that I take on, and whether it's Exo Man of War or Green Lantern, Hal Jordan and Green Lantern Corps, or whatever, it's, you know, I go into it sort of knowing what my first year is. As we come to the point where we're nearing the end of that first year, we reassess. And if we're going to keep going, I'll start coming up with the next year. I just kind of take it one at a time like that. I don't sit down and presume that there's going to be a big 50-issue storyline because in serialized comics, anything can happen. Universes relaunch three times over before anybody gets to 50 sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really not a – something that I plan for, but I do leave myself a lot of threads that I can pull on in the event that I do need to go more long term. And if you look at something like Hawkman number one, just that one double page spread that has all the Hawkmen, not all of them, but you know, they all wouldn't fit on two page spread, but that two page spread that has all of these Hawkmen from across time and space, that's 50 issues right there that you could do. So there's a lot of stories in that two-page spread waiting to be told if we're able to tell them. But like I say, there's a lot of factors that come into play before you get there.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope that you guys get to continue to do it because what you've done so far, the first four issues just blew me out of the water. You know, like I said, there were so many wonderful creative things that expanded Hawkman and made him into this character that I loved him even more as a hero, you know, than I had.
And that's the most gratifying thing I think about all of this for both Brian and myself has been that fan reaction. You know, it is, as I'm sure you're aware, exceedingly hard. Comic book fans are a tough bunch sometimes, you know, in terms of not tough in the sense that they're not nice or something, but tough in the sense that they're very discerning in what they like and what they don't like. And when you have a character like Hawkman who, you know, there's the Silver Age Thanagar fans and there's the Golden Age Carter Hall fans and, you know, all that kind of stuff. it's really great to have had as positive a response as we've had to this series, because we are taking some risk and we are doing some things that have not been done before with the character, and to have people be on board and to respond to it as well as they have, is it really makes it all worthwhile, and you just can't wait to sit down and do more of it, you know. So it's a very exciting book to be working on.
I'm so grateful you guys are doing it. It really makes me so happy to do it. I've got to ask a question about, you know, you're bringing the Atom back, you know, which is one of those great Atom and the Hawkman, you know, team ups. I used to love those when they came out a long time ago.
This is going to be Hawkman and the Atom.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to do something a little different this time. Okay, that'll be good. Of course, you know, the Hawkman and Hawkgirl. And Hawkgirl being in the Justice League. I mean, do you coordinate with, like, Scott Snyder or people? How does Hawkgirl fit in with Hawkman anymore? I mean, I'm glad you're building Hawkman into who he is. I mean, that is a wonderful thing to make him a strong character in his own right. I like that. But how does Hawkgirl figure into Hawkman these days?
She does figure in, and Scott is a really a great collaborator. I don't know if collaborator would be the right word, because we're not working on the book together, but he's a really great collaborator in the sense that he is, as the writer of the Justice League, really sort of guiding the ship of the DC universe in a lot of ways, you know, and he's really great about that and very generous and checking in and talking with other writers and letting them know what he plans to do with characters, wanting to know what we plan to do with characters and how he can help amplify it, you know, and what he does. And he's just an all-around good guy in addition to being a super talented writer. And so, yeah, we've talked several times about Hawkman and Hawkgirl, and she does absolutely fit in, but obviously that's nothing I'm going to tell you how here on the phone. But she does definitely fit in. But yeah. I do like the idea that as much as those two characters have always been linked, I like the idea that she's getting her own stories in Justice League, and Carter Hall, Hawkman, is getting his own stories in our book, and we're allowing these two characters to stand on their own independently of one another to establish who they are, and then let's bring them together and see who they are together. But I like that idea, and I like that we're able to do that in this direction, and I think if you were to take Hawkgirl and put her into the Hawkman series that we have now, you can see how much of a different series that would be. You know, Carter Hall wouldn't be experiencing that isolation and that loneliness that he has, and that sort of desperation from not even understanding who he is himself. You know, it would all sort of be lessen the impact and the conflict of that if he had his one true love next to him. You know what I mean? So I like that what we're able to do with this series is to keep them separate for now, but I can't tell you the number of conversations I've had, not just with Scott, but with Brian and with the editors and all the ideas that we have and ways that everything that we're doing, while Hawkgirl isn't necessarily on the page, she's behind the scenes and is a part of all of it. And, you know, we've shown that a little bit, I think, as you go. You know, you have her on the opening splash of issue 2, and you have in issue 3, Carter making a reference that he wished he wasn't alone. And, you know, We do make these references as we go, and there's a larger plan in place there, but it's something that we will develop and we'll get to as after we get through this first year. You know?
I don't want spoilers. I want you to just tease us a little bit if you can and just tell us a little bit about that. Microverse thing has got me really fascinated for issues 5 and 6. Are there any other teases you can give us that aren't going to, you know, spoil stuff as to what you have in mind for the rest of the year?
I would say that there's a very specific reason, you know, if you look at that double page spread from issue 1, he mentions Prince Khufu of ancient Egypt. He mentions Katar Hol from Thanagar, and he mentions Katar Ol of Krypton. We've seen two of those, so potentially we're going to see that third one here pretty soon. There's a very specific reason why we mentioned those characters in the way that we did, so definitely be looking forward to that, probably sooner than you think. As far as other characters who will be returning, we do have a lot of plans for a lot of things, including one that I'm super excited about that I've never talked to anybody about because I'm almost scared to say it out loud. I'm afraid they won't let me do it. But we do have a lot of plans with a lot of the characters, and hopefully, again, we're going to continue to do what we've been doing so far, which is to be respectful of the history of the character and what readers are familiar with. But if you've never read a Hawkman comic in your life and you sit down and you read this, it's just a great superhero adventure story. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, to have somebody say to me, which happens quite often, I've never read a Hawkman comic in my life, and I completely understand everything that's going on with this comic. Like, they don't even know how much of an achievement that is for them to say it because they don't know about the history of the character. Mm-hmm. But to have somebody say that to us is like the greatest thing in the world. Like, we were actually able to write a Hawkman comic that somebody who's never doesn't know anything about Hawkman can completely understand. But also is able to surprise readers like yourself who've been reading Hawkman and know the character intimately. That's a very difficult needle to thread. So we're going to try to keep doing that and delivering that on a month-to-month basis. Keep readers guessing and hit them with a lot of surprises.
It's just so terrific. You know, I one of the low points I thought in Hawkman's career was back in he was in the Superman animation. They had a Superman Aquaman Hour of Adventure, and they would have him in there every once in a while. Instead of Hawkgirl, he had a hawk by the name of Skreel. Skreel would sit on his head when he flew. He would stand there on his head, and I remember looking at it going like,
"Why would he not fly next to
him?" Well, I remember looking at it going like, "Ugh," and you know, because that was not what you should do with Hawkman. So, see, your book to me is what
was this like do. Around the same time that Hal Jordan had Itty in the comics? Like,
yes.
Was it just like a weird, crazy sidekick phase of comics that I don't even know about? You know.
Yeah, but you know, your book to me is an example of how to take a character and even build on it and improve it and make him somebody that, like you're saying, somebody that you don't necessarily have to know all this stuff about in order to enjoy the character, to understand the character and have great things going on. So, man, I hope you guys do get to do the 50 books. I'll be supporting it every step of the way because, man, it's one of those books. I have this thing about winged characters, and so for me, Hawkman's been around for years that I've really enjoyed. And I have to say, of all the incarnations I've read, this is the one I enjoy the most. I think you guys
I appreciate that.
You're hitting it out of the park.
It's as expansive of a concept as it is, I think it's very easy to comprehend. He reincarnates across time and space. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows what that means. You know, you can say that. It's five words. He reincarnates across time and space. I guess that's six words. you know, and you go, okay, I understand that. You know, I get it. You know, and I think if we always use that as sort of our North Star and try to use our adventures and base our adventures in that core thing like we're doing, it will always be a series that people are very easily able to pick up and just read and understand. Mm-hmm. And so that's something I take very seriously. You know, as I said earlier, I didn't grow up reading comics. I remember walking into the comic book shop in my mid-20s and being interested in, you know, how do I find a way in? And, you know, it was Superman 600 and Spider-Man 500 or whatever. And, it, you know, it would just felt like such a dense, impenetrable massive history that I didn't know how to get into it. So for me, I take very seriously the idea that every issue is somebody's first issue and needs to thread that needle of surprising the returning reader and not making it feel like you're, you know, treading the same thing over and over and over, but also being completely new reader friendly. And so to the extent that we're able to do that, you know, that's a win. So.
Well, I got to tell you, Hawkman is just that the thing that was better than I even hoped it could be. And so I just want to see you guys continue to do it as long as you feel interested in continuing to do it and keeping, you know, hitting home runs like this every issue. I'm going to be there, you know, supporting you guys and making sure that people get the word out about this wonderful book because it's a great game. I did want to mention to you, and I've been reading your writing for a long time. I actually read The Surrogates. Two trade paperbacks back in the day, and I thought,
that's the very beginning there.
Yeah, I read those, and I liked it. That whole concept still gets me, you know, of if you haven't read it, the real quick summary is that you get to put your consciousness into a machine that looks like what you want instead of who you are. And it was such a great story. I mean, I was just gripped. I remember reading the two of them and just thinking how great it was. You know, so I've been reading your stuff for a while. So I don't know whether you're getting better over time or if this is just, I love that and I love Green Lanterns. And this one to me is just, you know, you're touching me and as a Hawkman fan in ways that I never dare dream of. So I think it's really wonderful.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's a very humbling thing to be able to do what I do for a living. I don't take it for granted. Sometimes I look back and I think about Surrogates, which is a book that I wrote in 2002, even though it didn't come out until several years later. But, you know, that puts me at 16 years that I've been writing, and to still be around that long, I find very humbling, and I don't take it for granted. But also to really be doing something like Hawkman that I feel is upping my game from what I've done previously as well, and to keep growing and to keep improving and to keep getting better, which is always the goal. And you're never going to be perfect, and it's never going to happen, but you can always try to get better. Mm-hmm. Is a great place to be, and I'm very thankful to be in that position.
Well, man, I have to applaud your efforts because, man, you have just, like I said, you hit it out of the park every issue. I just love it. Now, I wanted to ask, are there other projects you're working on? Hawkman's probably keeping you pretty busy, but are there other things that we should be aware of that you're doing right now?
It is. I'm still writing Damage, which is one of the New Age of Heroes books, which is the artist-driven line that DC developed, and I'm working on it now with Aaron Lopresti. He joined the series with issue 9, and so he's a regular artist now, and right now he's drawn number 11. He and I are actually going to get together at New York Comic Con in a couple weeks and talk over some stories and things like that. And I'm also launching a new Freedom Fighters series that will debut in December. It'll be a 12-issue series that I'm doing with Eddie Barrows. And it involves the Freedom Fighters, and it's set on the Earth-X universe, which is a lot of fun because you get to build up and do a lot of world building here and not really be sort of bound to anything that's going on in the current, you know, main DC continuity and those kinds of things. So I'm having a lot of fun with that. That's actually what I was working on today. I was working on the fourth script for that series. So I have those two things going on. And then next year in May will be my first creator-owned book for DC. I'm doing a original graphic novel for Vertigo called 6 Days, which is a based on a true story in World War II, a battle that my uncle was involved in called the Battle of Granier, and sort of goes through the circumstances of that battle and my uncle who died as part of that battle, you know, what he went through and what his last days were like and those sorts of things. And I'm working on that book with Kevin Maurer, who is a journalist who's spent a lot of time with the 82nd Airborne, which is what my uncle was in. And, you know, he's embedded with soldiers in Afghanistan and done all kinds of things. And so that book will be out in May. We're very excited about that one as well.
Well, because I do enjoy Damage, I have to say. I sometimes forget you're involved with it because the artist name comes first in it. I enjoy that book too. So you're writing a lot of stuff that I'm really enjoying. You're going to get a whole lot of my money in the next year or so. So I think that's really good.
I appreciate that. Keep it coming.
So, man, keep it up, Rob. I am, as I say, I love Hawkman, and I hope you get to do a lot of it. And all those other things I enjoy as well. Damage is on my pull list, as well as, you know, I'm going to get signed up for these other ones as well. So, you know, keep it up. You do wonderful stuff.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.
It's over, Joker.
Over? Why, my dear delusional Dark Knight, it hasn't even begun.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.